Dum, da-dum, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-dum, da-dum, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-dum, da-dum, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Why haven't I told you? Oh, baby, I told every little star just how sweet I think you are. Why haven't I?
So I want to start off by saying that I totally get this movie more than any other movie I've ever gotten before.
Really?
No. I could not be more fucking confused by this movie.
Okay, so we're talking about a David Lynch movie this week.
If that helps you decipher what is the confusing movie we're talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about Mulholland Drive, which I would probably say is maybe my least favorite David Lynch movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I've seen Eraserhead. I've seen Blue Velvet, which I always call National Velvet, which is a Mickey Rooney movie about a horse. Oh. So very wrong idea there. Couldn't be more wrong.
Right.
We started off watching this movie together, and it's the first time I've ever seen it. You've seen it before.
Yeah.
And then I watched the last half of it, the first lesbian scene on, so through the second, on a plane with a 14-year-old boy sitting next to me. So I kind of like turned my iPad away.
Were you in the window?
I was in the window seat.
Okay. Well, so you could have kept watching.
It was so weird. I just kind of like skipped over it, but I got to see it this time and I got the gist of it. Some boobs.
Yeah.
Some tits.
And they're in love with each other.
So you are the very like philosophical one who gets things. Tell me what all of this is about.
Well, I don't think David Lynch movies are meant to be solved. And I say that because of many different elements. If you ever see interviews with David Lynch where someone foolheartedly asks him to explain what happened in a movie, he doesn't give an answer. He says, well, I think movies are images and sound moving through time together.
That sounds about right.
He actually said that about this movie on the Jay Leno show.
That's also what the Coen brothers say. They never really get to what their movies are about. They're always like, it's about a guy who likes bowling and drinks White Russians and wears a bathrobe. Because all these people are like, oh, it's about the Cuban Missile Crisis or whatever. And so this movie has so many dimensions and like most David Lynch projects. And I mean, I've seen Twin Peaks as well. So
yeah, I haven't seen all of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I've seen the first season of Twin Peaks.
A lot of people will say that Twin Peaks is epitome of David Lynch stuff, but I don't think it is.
What do you think is?
I would say, well, I would say that all of his movies have traces of Eraserhead in them in very small ways. Like if it's the sound design or like the way certain things come out of focus or way images are distorted on surfaces, you know?
Yeah.
These are all kind of tricks he's been playing with since his first movie.
And Eraserhead was his first movie.
Yeah, his first feature film. He did some short films before, but those are kind of like movies that I make where they're more like paintings or something. They're not really about anything. So he did a movie called Six Men Getting Sick, which was just a sculpture that was being filmed.
Six Men Getting Sick by the Seashore with Shelley and Seashells.
Yes.
That was the full title.
That's true.
Unabridged.
I actually think it did have a longer title,
like a
Dr. Strangelove type thing.
Just BS that. So I think Eraserhead is a really great movie. I have no fucking clue what's going on in it, but I love it because it's so weird.
You can kind of glean some kind of explanation off of Eraserhead, can't you? Babies and stuff, and there's the fear of fatherhood that's ultimately like destroying this guy's mental state. I remember reading that Eraserhead came from this idea he had called
The Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No.
Which was the, of course, new version when they redid it.
I forget what it was called, but it had something to do with a giant roach that was growing in someone's attic.
And I thought you were going to say something else. I thought you were going to say ass. That would be awful.
That's in
either way.
That's Wild at Heart, where puts roaches in his ass.
Ew! Seriously?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen Wild at Heart. Well, now I have the full visual of roaches in people's assholes, and so I'm good.
It's Crispin Glover that does it. It's George McQuarrie.
Of course. He's a fucking weirdo.
Did you see Lost Highway?
Yes.
All of it?
Long time ago. Like 10 years ago, I saw that.
Okay. Do you remember anything about it?
I hardly remember any bit of Lost Highway. Is Kyle MacLachlan in it?
No.
Okay, who is in it?
Bill Pullman.
Bill Pullman.
Patricia Arquette.
Okay.
Robert Blake.
Okay.
And Richard Pryor in his final role.
Wow, that was his final role? Yeah. Richard Pryor is the one who lit himself on fire.
Yeah.
That's like a Bloody Mary song or something. Like a Richard Pryor lit himself on fire 20 years ago. Yeah. I don't know.
say that into the mirror.
Yeah. Say it and he will appear to you like Biggie Smalls.
But Lost Highway, see, a lot of people have a theory that David Lynch kind of makes the same movie twice. Because if you look at what happens in Lost Highway, it's about a guy whose life kind of shifts into another person and then carries out until it sort of loops back to the beginning of the movie. And that's kind of what happens in this, don't you think?
So to get this straight, basically, Rita is actually Camilla and or Diane, who is actually Betty.
Yes. But Betty is like the personification of her
dreams,
or like her positive attitude or something.
Yeah,
her willfulness when she moves into California, you know.
And so what's up with the old people that keep showing up? So when she's at the airport, there's the old people. When she wins the jitterbug contest, which now makes sense with the swing dancing and all that crap. But like, what was that?
They like found her or something and brought her to California because they weren't related to her.
I thought they were just strangers she found on a plane.
Maybe.
You know how like you just, have you ever gotten on a plane and then you get off the plane and you like still talk to the person all the way to baggage claim? Because I mean, you all have to go get your bags at the same place.
Yeah, but they seem to know who she was.
That's basically what I gathered, is that she just like was sitting next to these people on the plane, talked to them. But I didn't pick this up the first time I watched it, that they were like at the jitterbug contest with her when she won.
Yeah, that's what makes me think that they're like agents or something from some podunk town.
Probably. And then they show up at the end when she kills herself. They like drive her mad.
Yeah, it's almost like they came to collect. You are supposed to be successful and now you're not. So we came out of this garbage bag in the back of
the
Winkies.
Grim Reapers. In the back of Winkies, which is not supposed to be Denny's, in case anyone thought that. Absolutely not.
So do you know the story with the production of this? I know you may have read a little bit about
it. So I know that it was supposed to be a television series.
Yeah.
And then they read it and they were like, no.
Well, they made it. And it was...
Oh, they made it.
Yeah, the first like hour of this movie is the pilot for a Mulholland Drive TV show.
Oh, shut up.
So right when like the tits come out, you know that they're not they're not on TV anymore.
Yeah. We're no longer in Kansas here, people.
But
we're
does it kind of feel like that to you?
Like a pilot?
Yeah, does it feel like a pilot that they were like, oh shit, now we need to come up with an ending? To me, it feels like it would have ended like this anyway in a David Lynch movie.
So if we were to compare the first hour of this to like Twin Peaks, which is a TV show, Twin Peaks has like some weird quirky people and some weird moments, but it ultimately like ties and links together and has some resolve at the end.
Of the first episode?
No, of the first season.
Does it?
Because they find out who the killer is, who killed Laura.
Oh, I haven't watched the first season.
Oh, well, sorry, but that's what happens. Yeah, but they find out who did it. And so... His other movies, though, just have these weird moments, like Blue Velvet. Is it Dennis Hopper that's in there?
Yeah.
And he's like breathing into a Kleenex or like a weird gas mask or something.
It's interesting because Dennis Hopper was like, well, should I act like I'm high off nitrous oxide when they were making this? And David Lynch goes, oh, I don't know what that is.
And he's like, mommy, mommy.
And so weird. And he said, well, that's not really what I had in mind, Dennis. What it was really supposed to be was just something that makes your voice high, like helium. And Dennis Hopper was like, oh, okay. He's like, but I like your idea better. Let's let's make it nitrous oxide.
You are the best. You should be David Lynch for Halloween. Like, don't dress like him. Just talk to people
I'm sure
him.
I'm turning into him as every day.
Yeah, it's creepy. You're also sucking on nitrous oxide. So maybe that's where he got the idea.
But Dennis Hopper in an interview said, when I went home that night, I thought, isn't it weird that someone would just keep helium in their pocket or whatever when they were about to rape somebody or something? And they were doing it just to make their, like, they weren't doing it to get high. They were doing it just to like freak someone out. And stuff like that is why David Lynch is so amazing, because it's just like this little thing, like, who would think of this and what's the motivation? And that in itself is like a puzzle of a character within the movie.
Let me ask you this. Is it poor direction to not say, like, you have helium in your pocket and it makes your voice higher? And to just say to the character, all right, suck on this, and then it changes you. And then you finish the shot and you go, that's not what I had in mind. I thought you were sucking on helium and it made your voice higher. It's like, why didn't you say that to begin with?
They said that during rehearsal. They didn't like start shooting and establish that.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, that sounds like I can't fucking read your mind. And that's different.
No, he tells it. And I think it's in the script too.
Is it?
Dennis Hopper interpreted that it was nitrous because he did a ton of drugs when he was younger.
I was going to say, isn't that when you get like a filling back in the day?
And David Lynch has never done a drug in his life.
That's shocking.
He just smokes cigarettes and drinks coffee and milkshakes. And that's what he's always done. So a lot of people are like, oh man, he must be high all the time. And it's like, no, he just smokes a lot of cigarettes and he drinks a lot of chocolate milk.
Yeah, it's just so weird. I mean, I love that though. I love weird shit. You know what I mean? But at the same time, like at the end of the movie, I have no idea what's gone on. Because you brought up a good point. You said, is the first half of the movie that she's sane and the second half is that she's insane, or is it reversed? And I kind of interpreted it as the first half of the movie, she's insane and she's making this like story that doesn't exist. And the second half, she's sane, and that's who she truly is. Because there are these elements where, like, Justin Theroux, the director, when they're at that dinner party where basically Camille and him are going to announce that they're engaged, and so they start having this weird laugh fest. He goes, I don't know what was up with that judge or that attorney, but she got the pool man and I got the pool. And it was like, oh, well, that happened before.
Yeah, so some might even interpret this as that whole second part is if things went the way that those mobsters or whatever, mobster producers wanted it to go, where he cast the right
woman. Wait, the second part was that way?
Yeah, and that's why his life is good and stuff, because when he doesn't go their way, his life is all shitty and things are crumbling around it.
But that still happens. He goes home and all of his bank accounts are closed and he finds his wife with the pool man.
That is such baloney.
What?
Do you remember when he says that?
No, I was like, what is?
When he's at Cookie's apartment, he goes, I'm at Cookie's downtown. And he's like, I'm sorry, Mr. Kesser, Mr. Adam, but the bankers, they shut off all your accounts. And he goes, well, I have cash. And he's like looking through his money and he looks up and he goes, that is such baloney.
That is such a David Lynch thing, if he drinks coffee and milkshakes and smokes cigarettes.
There's also a good line that Justin Theroux says in his next movie, Inland Empire, where he's talking about some coffee and he goes, well, it's all about the beans and I'm just full of beans.
Oh, Lord. That is just so crazy to me. But I don't know. I mean, I want to play devil's advocate here, whatever the fuck that means. I've never understood that saying, but I'm going to use it.
Al Pacino?
Yeah, whatever. I'm going to play Al Pacino here, and I'm going to say...
Do an Al Pacino impression?
Yeah, I'm going to say...
That is the worst Al Pacino impression.
Well, what does he do? He's like, hello.
Hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah. Hey,
I'm
come
the
on.
Devil.
Ah, you're
everywhere.
So I'm going to say here, I'm going to say it here. I'm going to say that the beginning of the movie is where she is crazy, and the end of the movie, she's insane.
So she's crazy and then she's insane?
Yeah. I just think that it's never ending.
Do you think this is the same person, or do you think this is like multiple dimensions of something?
Like schizophrenia or something?
You know, think about this exploration of you are driving and you like cut somebody off. Think about all the possibilities. If you didn't cut them off, how would your life be different? And maybe there's like these different dimensions that splinter off of every decision that you make. And that's kind of what these movies are like.
You just really got me thinking.
Well, these are just guesses.
It's interesting, right? Because there's some elements that stick through the movie. They go into Diane's apartment, and she's Diane the second half of the movie, right? Betty is, Naomi Watts. And they find a dead body laying there.
Yeah. Which is the best part of the movie.
Why? Why do they find a dead body?
Because Diane blew her head off when two elderly people were attacking her.
Oh my God. I didn't get that. Okay, so Betty and Rita, because they haven't switched into this new persona, but they went into the apartment and they predicted the future, or like, what was that?
I don't know. It's almost like they were in some kind of a portal or something into another world. It's like a Twilight Zone episode or
something. It's like that box, right? Because basically they got the key. They go to the Silencio, because she's like, Silencio, Silencio, Silencio. And then they go to that weird club. Is it Club Silencio?
Yep.
Okay.
That's the club.
That would make sense. So they go to that weird club and they have the key. And then all of a sudden, Betty has the box in her purse, which comes back in the end. And they're like, when you have the key, you know that we killed Camilla. This is all getting so fucking confusing because all these names change. And then that's when the movie shifts, right? So they go to Club Silencio after they had sex, and then they open the box, and then it falls to the floor. And then we cut to Betty transitioning into Diane, laying in that bed, and the cowboy is leaving the room, and he's like, it's time to wake up now.
Yeah. So it's almost like there's these mastermind overlords in Hollywood that are all run by that guy, Jay Anderson, who's the dwarf in Twin Peaks. And they put him
that
in.
That was crazy.
They put him in a full size human suit sitting down. So he just looks really so weird. It's such a weird effect. And I can't believe nobody else has done it in a movie. But the cowboy is connected to them. And we don't know why, but he's like a ambassador to them or something whenever someone gets out of line. But it's almost like they're producing these women to become stars, and they pretty much force them into casting agencies and studios because they're like running the show behind it.
But what's up with the beginning where Rita, as we know her, Diane or whatever you want to call her at the beginning, is in the car, and it's Mulholland Drive, and they're going to kill her, and then the car crashes into them, and then she has amnesia.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, the way I see it is if you look at it like they're controlling everything and things sort of loop around,
yeah,
then that's like an instance where we're in the middle of a loop and it goes wrong because that outside element comes in, the other car that they didn't control comes in, crashes the car, and it sets the whole sequence out of whack. And so now they need to like find her while they're recasting this Camilla Rose, because they say the girl is still missing. So then they have to have this other girl, Camilla Rose.
That's weird because she shows up at the end too. She kisses Camilla, but she's not Camilla. Yeah, like the blonde girl who they basically say you have to hire or we're going to kill you or whatever.
Well, don't they say that Rita's name at the end is Camilla?
Yeah.
Maybe she was Camilla the entire time. And then when that car accident happened and she was missing, they had to create a new Camilla that they are pushing into this film.
Who was Camilla the entire time? Rita?
Yeah. But she was lost and they didn't know where she was and she didn't remember who she was. So they had to create a new Camilla. It's like if Julia Roberts is going somewhere and you're like setting her up to be in this movie and then she goes missing and you're like, well, fuck, now we need to create a new Julia Roberts.
That's really weird. It's like, well, it says she's Julia Roberts, but she looks more like a blonde girl in a redhead wig.
It's like, well, just as long as I spit out this terrible espresso, you'll shudder in fear at me and you'll make my dreams come true.
That was just mind-blowing what you said.
Yeah. I'm just like figuring this out.
I mean, if I were to figure this out, my interpretation of it would be I couldn't even begin to start.
There clearly is like a looping mechanism in the script though, right?
I mean, there is, right? Because everything comes back together. The old people, the jitterbug scene. Yeah. She says that she won the jitterbug contest, which we never knew at the beginning is why we saw that weird opening sequence where people were like swing dancing and the old people were with her. And then we cut to the airport. They're on the plane. And then the end, she kills herself and the old people are there, like the borrowers.
Hollywood is predestined and everything is manufactured and created. And then if someone goes off on their own path, it ruins the whole system and the whole balance.
I guess for that one person, right?
Yeah.
It's really interesting because if you look at situations where you've had a Hollywood actress or you've had someone famous, right? Like a Britney Spears or Amanda Bynes or what have you.
Yeah.
There's even been like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. and like people who've had drug issues and they've spiraled into that. That has kind of, they hit like a lull in their career that could have been them being like a Marilyn Monroe or someone that like killed themselves. If you don't follow the rules of Hollywood, this is what happens to you. Now, David Lynch probably has no idea that this is what he's done.
Well, maybe. I don't know. You mentioned Marilyn Monroe, and I think that had something to do with the idea that this movie came from.
Interesting. But it's hard to say. He doesn't talk about it, but
no.
There's some weirdness with like Betty's audition. So she has her first audition. She kisses that really weird, gross guy.
Yeah, that leathery dude.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden they take her to Justin Theroux's set and he like basically has some chemistry with her and wants to hire her. And then the quote unquote Camilla Rhodes comes in and he like has to go, that's the one. That's who I want to hire. Yeah,
this
but he
is
wanted
the girl.
To hire. Yeah, but he wanted to hire her. But then at the end, she says, as Diane, I didn't click with the director. The director didn't like me, so he didn't hire me. And then they show the scene where, like, they're on the set of a movie and Justin Theroux is making out with Camilla, and that's, like, the start of their relationship.
Yeah.
And then...
And she's like, it could have been
crazy.
Me.
It's so crazy. I don't know, but you've got a good point there. I mean, there really are kind of, like, these rules to abide by. And if you want to make it big... Sometimes you have to, like, screw over some people. And she kind of screwed over Diane. She didn't. Do you think that she loved her?
No.
What do you think that was?
She had boobs. Those nice boobs.
So you don't think that Camilla loved Diane or that Diane loved Camilla?
Well, which one's which?
Okay, so Diane is Naomi Watts.
I think Betty loved Rita.
What about Rita?
I think Rita didn't know.
Had what, amnesia.
Yeah.
What about in the end when they showed them on the couch?
I don't know. Not too sure.
She left her pretty easily. I feel like she was using her to get her way in Hollywood. So the thing is, too, is that something that I've gathered is in life, you have to have a thick skin. You have to be willing to take criticism. You have to be willing to allow others to sometimes perform better than you, right? That's part of life. You're not always going to be the one on top or bottom or fisting someone's butt, whatever she was doing on the couch. And so if you are going to be an overly emotional person who lets those things get to you, and where you are uber competitive like that and you're not focused on yourself, as selfish as that sounds, you're going to kind of screw yourself over.
If you don't focus on yourself?
Yeah, because if you are so focused on everyone else and what they're doing and how they're doing better than you, you know, so-and-so's doing better than me, but they don't deserve it because of this, or I'm older, so I should have this, or whatever it is. Whoever focuses on themselves and makes themselves better and, like, lets life just happen and makes decisions for themselves, those are the people that tend to get their way in life or get ahead in life.
Sometimes.
But I mean, this may be getting way off script here and, like, super wacky. But I mean, I kind of feel like that's what this is getting at, because she has amnesia. She doesn't really seem to even care about anything but maybe herself. She doesn't really seem to find out who she is. And then in the end, when she's with Justin Theroux and she is Camilla, all she cares about is herself. She doesn't care about Diane. She's like, we can't do this anymore. And then Diane gets really emotional and gets angry at her. And then Camilla continues to climb the ranks as an actress and do better and better, and then marries a director ultimately. And that's what Diane is stuck on, is the fact that I was in love with you, I cared about you, and all you care about is yourself. And it's like, yeah, and that kind of worked for me.
Yeah.
And that's a shitty thing to say, but that's what it is, right? That's kind of how Hollywood works.
Well, yeah, that's how Hollywood works.
The thing is that people who get overly emotional and things like that, and I think this is just goes without saying, right? Or people who dwell on other people's success and don't focus on how they can be successful. They're the ones that, like, kind of fall into this hole. And that's what this gets into. And that's how Hollywood is. And that's how life can be. If all you focus on is, like, I hated this person in high school and they're super successful, why can't I be successful? And that's, like, all you care about. And you go stalk them on Facebook or, like, use social media or whatever. Like, that's what your life is going to be. Why not just focus on you? You're not going to have the same path as someone else. And maybe that's what this is getting at, is...
I don't think David Lynch was thinking about any of this stuff, but...
That's what I'm getting at. But, you know... I am Laura Lynch. I am Laura Lynchy. And
but these movies are interesting because it's like the director is just opening a box of puzzle pieces and throwing them at you.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not seeing the pieces go together. It's kind of your job to do that.
That's kind of infuriating to me. I just gave you my perception of what I thought of the movie. And you were like, I don't think that's it.
Yeah, but isn't that great that we can talk about this movie for so long? I see so many movies that I don't even care to talk about after I see them. And so it's so refreshing watching David Lynch movies, because you can just talk about them for hours and hours. And nobody's right. Nobody's wrong.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of books about David Lynch and how he directs. And there really isn't, like, a big picture for anything. When he made Inland Empire, he was shooting it scene by scene. He would make his actors pick out one prop. He would give them a choice between, like, two props, and they could only pick one. And then that prop would show up later in a scene almost by accident.
So they would have to react to it.
Well, they wouldn't be in that other scene. It would be other, because there's like 50 actors in Inland Empire that only show up for one scene at a time.
Interesting. I've never watched it.
It's kind of hard to watch.
Is it bad? Like, it's, well, it's not like, been on for a while.
It's not like bad. It's like Mulholland Drive, but they shot it with like really cheap DV cameras. So it's just kind of, it's not as engrossing, I would say. It's kind of, it looks like someone made it with a video camera.
No, but it's true. I mean, if you think about other movies that we've watched, like we watched Moana, last night, and we were like, that was a great movie. We didn't have a lot to say about it other than like, I was like, I have to get the soundtrack. This is great. But yeah. I mean, like, you got it. She was a princess who wanted to explore and be an adventurer, and she did. And then her people followed and she, you know, came out on top. But I mean, Disney can never do this kind of a movie. They can never make it like ambiguous like this.
You know, Disney put out a David Lynch movie called The Straight Story.
Really?
Yeah, but it's not a weird movie at all. It's about a guy who finds out his brother is dying or died. I think he's dying. And he's
dead by now. It doesn't matter.
And he's an old guy and he can't drive, but he has a tractor. So he drives his tractor across America and meets up with his brother. And it's a totally regular movie directed by David Lynch. And you can still tell that David Lynch directed it just by the way people act and stuff.
Yeah.
But nothing weird happens in it.
So here's one thing that you told me about Naomi Watts. You were like, I thought she was unbearable during this movie, but until you see the end, you said this to me when we first watched it, until you see the end, you won't get why she's so bad. So like, what were you getting at?
Well, I think she was just playing a different part than she does later.
So it was intentional for her to be bad.
I think so. Because when you watch it, you're like, God, that is terrible acting.
Yeah. Like, well, she had been acting for, gosh, I don't know, 15 years by this point and trying to make it as an actress. And she was about to quit acting, and she did this movie. Yeah. And I remember the previews for this movie and everything, and I confused it with some murder mystery English movie with Ryan Phillippe and Maggie Smith. I confused it with that. I have no idea what the movie was. And I think they were made at different times, but I think that she is way better at the end. By far.
Yeah.
But do you think it was Lynch's directing in the beginning that was like, just be like, you know, or I can't do a Lynch voice, but like,
just be like on a soap opera all the time.
We hired you for this because you're on a soap opera.
But she's acting like someone in Leave It to Beaver, you know?
Oh,
like,
totally.
Like totally a different time period. And I just can't think that that's not on purpose, you know?
I want to say everything's intentional, but then when you tell me it's supposed to be like helium and then it's nitrous oxide, if you're a good director and you have good actors and you trust their decisions, but what was the whole thing with the guy in the Winkies? Like, I get the end, how she hired him to kill Camilla, but like, what was the beginning where like there was like a phone book and he went in and he wound up having to kill like the janitor in the lady next door because she got like shot in the leg?
Well, that wasn't at the Winkies.
That was kind of funny. No, but I just mean at the end he was in the Winkies.
Oh, yeah.
That guy. What was up with that?
I don't know. He was just like a hitman, I guess, because they had to set that up because Diane, Naomi Watts, gives him Camilla Rose.
Right.
Which is Laura Herring or whatever her name is.
Yeah.
At the end. And that almost could say that that's the event that sets everything off. And then she gets the key, which is a different kind of key than the...
I mean, they're all blue.
Yeah, but the one that they have at Silencio is like a triangle, isn't it?
I mean, you've seen this more times than me.
Yeah. But as far as what Winkies itself is, I don't know.
It's a Denny's.
Well, it's like a hot dog place.
Is it a hot dog place?
Yeah, it's like a famous California hot dog place.
And what was up with that scene with the homeless lady in the back alley where he's like, I had a dream about a homeless lady in the back alley. And he's like, well, let's go look. And then there is, and then he dies. Like, how does that tie into the story?
Well, I don't know. At the end, we see that he's the guy at the register and he's having dreams where he's seeing that guy that he's meeting there at the register in the same spot that he's in.
So meta.
I think it's just another element of things looping within each other. And, you know, and that's one thing where I think that those people were probably major characters when this was a TV show, and they were probably going to have their story expanded on.
Oh, that's true.
Because otherwise, this movie is not really about them at all.
Yeah, and the landlord lady was so interesting, Justin Theroux's mother, or whatever she is.
Coco?
Yeah, she's like, won't believe what that kangaroo did to this courtyard. Wow.
And she's like acting terribly too, because she's well, afterwards, I can show you around if you want. Well, no hard feelings if you don't.
Well, everyone gets along fine with me here, if you know what I mean. Well, I better let you go. Like, what? And then even in the end where she's Justin Theroux's mother, Naomi Watts goes, the director didn't like me that much. And she goes, well, that's a shame. And she like pats her hand and has like her gross hands touching her. Like, I was just like, ugh, I don't want those hands touching me. She had painted on eyebrows.
Yeah. She's like a famous actress too. I think this was like her last movie as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know who she is.
What was up with the like mob people? Like,
I guess
that goes back to like the whole Hollywood thing. And if you don't follow the rules, then like someone will kill you.
I guess. And I mean, And I mean, this movie is so inspired by stories of California and Hollywood over the years, like him bashing in the dude's windshield and stuff is something Jack Nicholson did. And Jack Nicholson lives on Mulholland Drive. Mulholland Drive is where the Roman Polanski thing happened, where he's taking pictures of that 14-year-old that got him banned from the country.
Yeah. How many years ago was that?
That was in like the 70s, I want to say.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He still can't come back into the country.
And, statute of limitations never let up on that one.
And that was at Jack Nicholson's house. He was letting,
it was?
Yeah, he was letting him stay there for a while. Do you think he came back?
Was that his niece or like, why was that girl there?
No, I don't think he was related.
That's weird.
Roman Polanski was taking photos of her. And then he was like, why don't we take more pictures with the, let me see your butt.
But what was she doing at Jack Nicholson's house? Like, what was
the... He's like, let's go to my friend Jackie's house.
Oh, so he just took her there.
He's on vacation right now, but he says I could come over anytime I wanted. That's what Roman Polanski sounds like. But do you think Jack Nicholson came back into town from whatever he was doing and was like, ah, what the fuck, Roman? Why did you have to do this at my house?
Seriously. But I mean, nothing ever happened to Jack Nicholson. I mean, granted, like in the 70s, I wasn't even born, but
yeah.
I don't know what the fallout of it was. It's like how one of the Olsen twins was around with Heath Ledger died or something, yeah. Right?
And then she like, was like, I know nothing about that.
Yeah, or and it's like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Or it's like that scandal where people think Christopher Walken and Robert Wagner killed Natalie Wood on a boat. And the theory is that Natalie Wood caught them having sex with each other. And
Christopher Walken and who?
Robert Wagner, number two from Austin Powers.
You are shitting me.
And they murdered her because they were
what?
Because I think the story is that she like hit her head and drowned or something, but they were fine. Stories like that are kind of what this movie is about. It's like those weird occurrences where you're like, I don't know, man, some shit's going on here, but
I need to look far more into this Christopher Walken. That is the first time. I just can't even like get my mind off of that. I've never heard that.
I might be completely wrong, but that's what I've heard. And it's an unsolved murder.
Is this like that Richard Gere hamsters or gerbils in the butthole?
I think there's a lot more credence to this than the Richard Gere is just like a rumor that went around. I don't think it actually happened, but it's like a joke.
I should look into that too, but
yeah,
I don't know if I want to.
You'll find a hamster.
Oh my God, I don't know what I'll find.
Yeah, look into that, but it's kind of like the vibe that hearing a story like that gives you is what the vibe this movie gives you.
I have no idea what you're talking about with a story, and I'm just like, I can't get over it. Christopher Walken and Robert Wagner.
Yeah, look it up.
Killed someone. I can see Christopher Walken killing someone.
Yeah.
Can you?
Of course.
Like, I mean, is it just because we've seen him kill someone in a movie?
Yeah, King of New York. Welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, and he's an asshole in Batman.
Yeah.
Begins, or wait, no, not Begins. Forever.
Returns,
whatever. And it was
how industrious.
Well, I would definitely say that it's interesting to me that Lynch was nominated for an Oscar for this movie for Best Director.
Was he really?
He was.
Jeez.
That's the only way to get this back on track.
I would have not. This is the only David Lynch movie that Roger Ebert likes.
It's in his top movies
ever. Roger Ebert booed Wild at Heart when it won the Golden Palm at the Cannes Film Festival.
Trashy.
And he said Blue Velvet is one of the most disgusting movies ever made. And he just like had a huge problem with David Lynch movies until this movie came out. And I don't know. I just don't think this movie is quite as good as all his other movies.
I mean, I wonder why that is. Maybe he needed some nice looking tits in a movie.
Because it's not like there's much different in terms of like how women are treated or anything in this movie.
So what was his issue with the other ones? Do you know?
He had a big problem with Isabella Rossellini being naked in the front yard in Blue Velvet. That was like a part where he's just like, I am so done with this movie. But David Lynch movies are interesting because I would say they're not necessarily horror movies, but they have
scenes, like mysteries.
But they have scenes that are more scary than most horror movies. Don't you think?
I didn't think any scene in this movie scared me.
You weren't scared when the homeless guy or girl slid out? Because it's kind of scary.
I mean, it was just like, whoa.
And remember, everyone gets scared in Lost Highway when he looks up at Patricia Arquette's face and it's that mystery man's face.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
weird.
And that's like a cheesy effect if you look at
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. But it's just music, sets the tone of it. Yeah.
And Dennis Hopper is so scary in Blue Velvet.
This, to me, was more like The Room than any David Lynch movie.
The bad movie, The Room?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It was like getting at something it couldn't get to. But that's a David Lynch thing. I mean, it's just his actors are always like if you watch Twin Peaks, They're always just like, except for Kyle MacLachlan, I just think he's natural. I think he can make like a weird part seem natural. But like, yeah. I think he intentionally gives them really awkward, strange direction that doesn't feel right.
Totally.
And then he sees what they do. And then he's like, cut, perfect. And it's like the first take that they do. I love David Lynch. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love him. I think this is a really good movie. I would actually probably give this a 4 on the Plex Files.
Yeah.
Maybe a 3. Maybe a 4.
I'd probably give it a 4 as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's good.
There's something interesting with actors in David Lynch movies that it's almost like they pause way longer than any other movie actor does.
Yeah.
And it's not like David Lynch is like, and pause. Like, I've seen behind the scenes stuff of him, and he's never like, and take a really long time to say this.
Maybe it's all the rehearsal.
Maybe. I don't know. I'll show you this documentary that shows him directing people, and he goes to Harry Dean Stanton and is just like, here's your line. You're going to say this when you come in here, and I want you to make it really dramatic.
What's the name of the documentary?
It's called Lynch 2.
Like, as well?
number two.
Is there number a Lynch 2. 1?
It's like a 30-minute thing that's just raw footage of him like shouting at people on the set of Inland Empire.
Oh my God, that sounds great.
But it shows him directing a little bit. He's directing these girls who are getting this good news of Laura Dern getting a part in a movie. And he's like, and then you hear it and you're so excited and you just start jumping up and down. And that's like all the direction he gives them. And they're like, yeah, like playing in front of me. He's like, yeah, yeah, that's perfect. That's beautiful. That's what he always says. It's beautiful. He goes, and Laura, you're going to walk into this room. You're going to have this red sheet and you're going to throw it over a chair and it'll look beautiful. And then you're going to continue walking. So a lot of it is like your paint in my painting. And I want the paint to go over here and do this. It doesn't really need to happen. It's not about anything, but it is a construction of some kind of art.
I wish I could make a living doing that, don't you? Just like if I could just confuse the shit out of people and like give weird direction. If I could just be like, yeah, we're going to make this amazing program. It's going to be like people yelling and then people not yelling. And then all of a sudden we're going to like dance around and then everyone's going to be great. And then someone gave me $20 million. I would be like, this is great.
Yeah, I mean...
that connects or makes any sense. I mean, but it shouldn't. It's David Lynch.
I mean, he made Eraserhead, and that kind of was... I'm trying to think of like what a modern movie that's kind of like Eraserhead would be that... I mean, not like a movie that's like it, but something that came out of nowhere, was small.
High Rise.
Kind of.
No, I don't know.
Well, I'm talking about in terms of it actually like propelled someone's career, because Mel Brooks saw Eraserhead and funded The Elephant Man. The Elephant Man got nominated for Oscars. David Lynch got huge, got all this money.
Never
to
saw
make.
The Elephant Man.
I haven't either, but it's supposed to be one of his best movies, but it's kind of a normal movie too. But then he gets all this money to make Dune because he's like the hottest director
God,
at the time.
Failed miserably. Yeah.
Dune didn't do well, but he still is in with Dino De Laurentiis, who funds Blue Velvet, which is like a lot of people would say is his best movie. And then he does Twin Peaks and all this stuff. So it's like, if he wasn't discovered by the right person, he might be still just making paintings, you know? Because in between movies, he doesn't really develop movies or anything. He just paints and makes music and stuff like that.
It's crazy. And his daughter is a director now,
yeah,
isn't she?
Jennifer Lynch.
And I've never so what seen has she
movie.
Done?
She did a movie called Hiss. Which
Hiss?
With a bunch of S's in it about a snake woman. She did a movie called Surveillance, which was Bill Pullman.
I thought she did one that I knew. Like, I thought I saw a movie of hers.
No, you might be thinking of someone else. Because I've never seen a movie that she's done. I hear that she's not that good.
Well, maybe she just needs Mel Brooks to come in and propel her career.
Maybe. She actually was a writer, too. She wrote a bunch of Twin Peaks stuff. I listened to Now Playing podcast. It's a podcast I used to edit for. And right now, they're going through all the Twin Peaks stuff, and they're actually doing David Lynch movies.
That's awesome.
But they also have a show called Books and Nachos, where they review books that are based, that are like have some correlation to the movies that they're reviewing.
I was going
to
say nachos.
Yeah.
No, I just want nachos, but continue.
And so they talk about this book, and they are the ones that had this theory that some parts of this book seem a little too real. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, God, that's fucked up. I don't want to think of David Lynch like that, but maybe.
But you know what? Like, I could write some really fucked up shit. And it's because, yeah, like, I mean, I have crazy dreams. Like, I'll wake up the next morning and be like, I don't even know if I can go to work today. Or like, you know, there were times when I was in school where I would have dreams where I would go to school and go through the whole day. And there would be some weird parts that were clearly me not being in school. But I would wake up at noon and then call my parents and be like, I think I just missed school for the day. So I can get where imagination can play in, because I could write some really fucked up stuff. And you wrote your comic book, Isis, which is about a female serial killer. And she does some insane shit. But that doesn't mean that you were like, had some weird thing happen to you when you grow up.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, some people are just very imaginative. And like, if that's the case, that's really fucked up. But at the same time, I feel like we oftentimes think that people that have imaginations that take things to this pushing the boundary level as like what happened to them in their life. And in reality, it's that they're just very imaginative and they can come up with something different than like My Little Pony or Rainbow Bright or whatever. They can just take it there.
Yeah,
and if your dad's David Lynch, he wrote some weird shit.
Yeah. And like going to my comic book, that's inspired by all the movies I grew up watching.
Yeah.
And like kind of how they graduated to become more and more violent movies.
Right.
But I'm not a violent person at all. But
he
you know,
he beats me.
But you know, I guess if you take that same school of thought with her growing up watching his movies, then maybe that inspired.
Right? Because, I mean, you grew up, I mean, your parents let you watch practically anything.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say. I grew up where, like, when I was 14, I got The Birdcage for my birthday. And my mom gave it to me and had to hide it from my second stepdad's parents because he was Mormon and she converted into Mormonism. And it was like about gay and gay was bad, even though my dad's gay. And it was like this whole weird thing. But like, that was my childhood. It was like, you can watch this, but don't tell anybody that you watch this. And it was fucking weird, you know? And so now I'm unfiltered and I'm whatever. So it's like, it didn't stop me from watching those things. It just delayed it. So I don't know. I mean, my imagination is pretty strange. Like whenever I've done improv and things, like I can go somewhere really fucking weird, but that's just because people's brains work differently.
Yeah.
And I mean, just like Diane, we're all fucked up and crazy and have little old people living in our brains telling us to shoot ourselves.
Yeah. Who's the best part of this movie?
Who? Like actor-wise?
Yeah.
Well, Justin Theroux is just hot.
Do you think he's hot in this with those tinted glasses that he wears all the time?
I can see right through them.
I think tinted glasses are so weird.
I just think that he looks great.
What's the photo for? I'm at Cookies downtown.
God.
That is such baloney.
I think that the girl who plays Camilla is really good, or Rita or whatever her name is. But
yeah.
I think she's really good. This was kind of Naomi's jumpstart to her career in like King Kong and The Ring and stuff. I think that the best eye candy is Justin Theroux.
Okay.
He's so good in The Leftovers.
Yeah,
he's God, really is good. He good.
It's too bad he kind of sucks as a scriptwriter.
What does he write?
He wrote Iron Man 2. He wrote Zoolander 2, which is like the worst movie I've ever seen.
Oh my God, well, the first Zoolander is like one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but he also wrote the second one, which kind of...
That was bad.
Which kind of ruins the first one.
I've just... kind of space.
But he writes like zany screwball comedies, but then he's an awesome actor. And
he's so beautiful.
Yeah. And you should see him in Inland Empire also. He's really strange in it.
Is he? Oh, I'd love to see it.
There's this part where his face is like right up in the camera and he starts crying and he's like, and it's just so weird looking. And there's all this blue light on him and stuff. It's weird.
Well, did you like Tropic Thunder?
It's all right.
He wrote Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
So basically like he's in with Ben Stiller and Robert Downey. I don't know.
In with Ben.
In with Ben. He wrote Rock of Ages, the screenplay. Now that was a musical first.
That is a terrible movie too. He writes some of the worst
movies. That's a musical though. So you can't really, I mean, when you're writing the screenplay, you're writing like how this is going to work on camera. So when you write it.
They walk over here. They sing. They dance.
That's like saying that the producers made in 2005, 2006. With Matthew Broderick.
I get that
and
you
Nathan
find
Lane.
This fellow attractive, but you shouldn't have to.
I'm going to defend him till the death.
You shouldn't have
is
to
what
defend,
I'm getting at.
Nobody should defend these scripts. I'm sure that he knows what he's doing and he doesn't think that these
are
amazing.
And he didn't even write Zoolander.
Okay.
He wrote Zoolander too, though.
He's amazing in The Baxter. That's probably his best role.
Oh my God. Well, he's just so good looking in The Baxter. That's why I watch The Leftovers on like repeat in the bathroom. The lights off. I'm just kidding. But no, I think he is super attractive. Like he has aged well. He kind of reminds me of Adam Levine. I don't know why.
I don't know who
Maroon
that is.
5 lead singer.
Oh, he is a white male.
I'm sure he has a tattoo somewhere. So thank you for introducing me to this. And I'm sorry I had to finish it on a plane in front of a 14-year-old.
That's fine.
At least I didn't finish it like Naomi did on that couch in front of a 14-year-old.
And you watched it on an iPad, too.
I did.
How was the cinematic experience? Were you able to get engrossed in a David Lynch movie watching it on an iPad?
I was. Like, yeah. I mean,
I am too.
No
there's,
issue.
There's this famous video of him talking about watching movies on your phone. And he says, if you watch Inland Empire at the beginning, there is a wind at the very beginning that you can only get if you're in a ideal home viewing experience or in a theater.
Or if you have noise canceling headphones.
Yeah. And he goes, and you wouldn't in a trillion years get that same effect watching it on your phone. He goes, so how can you think that you're going to know how a movie is if you're watching it on your fucking telephone. Get real.
God. Well, David Lynch, like here's it. The thing. We're in the 21st century. iPhones now shoot in 4K. I could probably make a movie on my iPhone, and my iPad is where I do business. It's where I do my business.
Yeah. My iPad is where I flick it to Justin Theroux.
Oh, if only he were topless in this movie, but he's not.
What's your favorite David Lynch movie?
Oh, Eraserhead.
Okay. What's Absolutely. One that you haven't seen?
Elephant Man, I guess.
In the Straight Story?
Wild at Heart.
You have seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, shit. We should watch that.
That's Nick Cage?
That's probably my favorite.
Laura Linney? Is she in that?
Laura Dern.
Laura Dern. Yeah, he loves Laura's because there was a Laura in this movie. Laura Dern is in a lot of his stuff. Laura is the character in Twin Peaks that's killed.
Laura Palmer.
I feel like he's out for me.
Yeah?
I'm out for you, David Lynch.
Maybe.
How would I say that if I were David Lynch? I'm out for you. David, I don't know. But thank you for this experience.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for warning me about the tits on the airplane before. Yeah. Like, I was able to, like, sense it happening before it happened and turn my iPad so that the 14-year-old boy's parents didn't try and arrest me for flashing him.
Do you get
something.
In trouble if you watch an R-rated movie on a plane?
What if you watch porn on a plane? Could
well,
you
that, I mean,
that
would be like public obscenity, I would say. But
what
watching,
I don't know. I've never like read the laws. Movie. I don't know. I mean, I get uncomfortable watching movies with any body part with my dad around.
Yeah.
Legs, arms.
Or in public.
Heads.
You know?
Not in public. Just with my family in the room. Because I feel like, yes, we all know this exists. So pay attention to this the next time my like dad or mom is here watching a movie. But I will always like strike up a conversation in the middle of like a sex scene or something. Like I would never watch Watchmen with my dad. Right. Ever.
My parents watched Watchmen with my sister.
Oh my God. And was that unbearable for her?
Yeah.
God. And what if they start being like, now that's how you bend that knee, or like, that's what I did, or like, God, I just don't even want to fucking hear it. So I say we end this with a song as usual.
Okay, what?
Crying, Silencio. So.
Silencio, por favor. You don't even know the song.
I don't.
It's Crying by Roy Orbison in Spanish.
I know a song called Cry by Faith Hill.
God.
I could sing that for you. I also know a Mandy Moore one. If I had just one tear rolling down your cheek, maybe I could call, maybe I'd get some sleep if I had just one moment at your expense. Maybe all my mystery would be well.